Aloha.
Aloha, how you doing?
Hey, Joseph, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You got two more Emmys now.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, that's great.
You continue to get more.
Nice to be honored for director and host again. It's great.
Wow. And your wife got one too, didn't she?
We were nominated for the show, Best Travel Adventure Show. And so as executive producer, and producer, Julie was nominated, but we didn't win that award. And we didn't win the award for cinematography, even though our cinematographer has been nominated four times. But I did win for director and host.
Wow.
So we all win, you know. We're all involved
yeah.
in producing Travel Scope. It takes a team of people to create our shows. And so in a sense, we all win. Just my name happens to be on the award. But, you know, my wife... Julie spoke when I got the award for a host. She spoke and talked about our crew and talked about the show, and so that was so we all participated in the celebration, and we certainly had a good time.
Wow.
It's always nice when you win. It's nice to be nominated and recognized, but it makes for a much more enjoyable evening if you actually win.
Oh yeah, you get to wear your tux, and now I imagine by now you've paid for that tux.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, several times over. Yeah. So anyway,
well, I think
good.
It's,
how are things in Hawaii?
Oh, things are wonderful. Things are wonderful here.
Good.
Yeah. Now, I think you have 117 episodes in distribution as of 2016, but you're already. You're taping this year's, right? You just came back from doing a major shoot, didn't you?
Yeah, we were gone for roughly two months. We were home for about 4 days in between there. But we went to Cambodia and Vietnam for a Mekong River show. It was a cruise, river cruise, and we were in Cambodia and Vietnam. And then we stayed over for a couple of days, and another crew came in, and we shot a show in Myanmar, Myanmar/Burma, we were home for about 2 weeks, and then we went to Taiwan and shot another show in Taiwan in the Matsu Islands, and covering the Matsu Festival, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, religious pilgrimage in the world. It's a 9-day 200-mile pilgrimage with thousands of people in the procession and millions of people that actually participate, because it goes through 9 towns and everybody's involved. Quite an event, and highly recommended for people who are looking for a explosive event. I mean, it's incredible fireworks and
really
a lot of wonderful things. The most wonderful thing about it is everybody opens up their homes and their shops, and the pilgrims are given places to sleep in people's homes and in different kinds of arenas and things like that, and food or free food is made by the restaurants in the different towns that they visit, and also the individual homes offer people food and drink, and it's all part of gaining merit from the god of the sea.
Well, we talked to a lady here, Deidre Teagarden, is involved in many things, and her mother did that twice, that pilgrimage, and it's amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's in her 70s now, and she did the first one many years ago and went back and did it again. But she taught school there and taught English years and years ago there. But she was telling us about it, and it was amazing, absolutely amazing pilgrimage. And a lot of people don't know about this particular pilgrimage, but I can't wait to see your show on that.
Taiwan's kind of a secret to a lot of people who misunderstand the country as being a place of, you know, from Taipei, at high tech in Taipei 101, which used to be the tallest building in the world, and Taipei and Taiwan for those of us who are older, remember it from as a producer of toys and rather cheap goods back in the early 50s, 60s, and that time. But the thing is, it's a completely different country now. I mean, it's very, very, tourism is actually quite a big industry now.
I think you've added to that. I tell you, Joseph.
I would hope so. We've done
shows. You have, and you've been recognized by their government as one of their
three
top
times. We won three awards, tourism awards from Taiwan, because of all the shows that we've done, and not just the number, but the kind of shows we've done, which they were part of season 9, the award-winning season 2, and that we've been with the Matsu, we just shot a Matsu festival in the Matsu Islands, but we were in the Penhu Archipelago, which is a little bit closer to Taiwan than the Matsu Islands. The Matsu Islands are actually 100 miles from Taiwan and only 6 miles from China, which had put them under the gun. For decades, and you know they were regularly bombed. The military was on all of the islands for decades, you know, almost 40, 50 years. But now things have gotten a little better, and the relationship between Taiwan and China depends on the day, I imagine. But that there's less military on it, and they've kind of starting to develop it as a tourism destination. That's really a lot of nice things going for the Matsu Islands. But the show that season 9 was the Penhu Archipelago, which is very close to Taiwan. You can get there by ferry, and it's really being promoted as a getaway for the people of Taiwan, the Taiwanese. And for tourists, it's a lot of the island beach type of experiences, and it's a lot great seafood. A lot of different kinds of accommodations, very nice 5-star accommodations, and then on some of the outer islands, more homestay type of situation. A lot of history connected to the fishing industry, and certainly the ancient fishermen the fishermen who since ancient times have been coming to the island. So there's a lot of wonderful cultural parts of cultural experiences.
And
Matsu
imagine
islands connected to Matsu, so it's a kind of a spiritual experience.
Yeah, I was going to say Buddhism's got to be very big there, right? We do Buddhist.
The Taiwanese, their spiritual outlook on the world is kind of mixed with a lot of different things, just like before communists declared God doesn't exist, kind of thing. A communist being atheistic basically stripped China of a lot of its spiritual heart, and the Cultural Revolution added to that by destroying things and, very much along the line of the Taliban, destroying idols and sculptures and temples and all that kind of stuff. So they kind of stripped China, mainland China, of a lot of its spiritual background, although it's coming back a bit. But and Taiwan's kept that all up because all of those people, 2 million of them left in 1949 at the end of the Civil War in China, and came into Taiwan and basically took Taiwan over and have brought all their traditions and all of their spiritual background with them. And it's very, it's very interesting. It's Buddhist, it's Taoist, it's animist, it's ancestor worship. It's all sorts of things. And in Taiwan, you get it all kind of rolled into one. So you get a little bit of everything. Like Matsu is really not a Buddhist god, although she did study Buddhism, because she was a real person in China. So they have that element. But it's really a Taoist, she's really a Taoist god, but not even a god, really. She's just a deity, not really, everybody, she's like absolutely everybody's good luck charm in Taiwan.
That's great. That's good to know that you have a deity as a good luck charm. I love
that's kind of what she
that's
is.
Great.
I mean, they pray to her for many things. She's involved in. She's the goddess of the sea, but she also helps women with childbirth.
Kind of like a Kuan Yin? Is it like a kind of like a Kuan Yin?
Kuan Yin is the god of mercy.
And compassion, yeah.
Certainly they have that god as well. Mm-hmm. But so she sometimes gets confused with Kuan Yin. But Matsu has kind of a different program. Matsu is like truly connected to fishermen and the sea. And in fact, supposedly... She drowned in saving her her brother. She drowned in the ocean that is just off of the Matsu Islands, and her body washed ashore. And when you go to the Matsu Islands, you can visit a temple where her tomb is.
Wow!
So she's supposedly there.
Wow!
So
that interesting?
That's their story. In any case,
yeah.
And but she has hundreds and hundreds of temples throughout Taiwan.
Wow.
Devoted to her.
I'd never heard of that.
There are many pilgrimage actually throughout Taiwan during this time of the year. It coincides with her birthday, and but the big one is the one that takes the one we covered. And so it's.
I can't wait to see that. Now I have to ask you because I have a friend who lives in Cambodia in Chiang Mai and goes to Myanmar and Laos and all those places too. Because if you're living there, you have to. If you haven't paid that big fee, you have to leave and come back in because you have their version of a green card. So anyway, he's been to Myanmar and a lot. And I guess there's still, with this last year, there were some changes in Cambodia with the government. The king finally died, right?
And in Thailand, the king finally died.
Yes, in Thailand. Oh, I'm sorry. And so yeah, I mean, there's still been some questions, but I haven't heard of any uprisings. How is the political scene there?
Well, and I haven't been to Thailand in quite a while. So
I'm getting it all mixed up. I'm sorry. I'm bringing Thailand in with Cambodia.
Thailand, but from what I've read, there are movements afoot they're moving to liberalize the country and to make it more democratic than it's been recently because the military got involved in order to create order, which it always tends to do. And so that was, there was a clampdown of sorts in Taiwan. And the new king is supposedly very much moving in a direction they didn't expect him to do, which it basically is taking a little of the power away from the military. And they didn't expect him to do that. They didn't expect him to be interested at all in any kind of governing of sorts. But he supposedly has come out and stepped into the role of king and done some things to limit the military's power in Taiwan. So there's hope that he will step up and act more like his father, who was revered and very much involved, although he was very supportive of some of the military positions, but he did have kingly powers and he used them, and they're hoping his son will do the same and moderate that military in Thailand. And in Myanmar, they had the woman. I never couldn't pronounce her name right. I think it's Aung Yan Se. That's right. She was under house arrest for 15 years, and there was terrible things going on in Myanmar where the military was, and the cronies in the military, the guys at the top, were propagating on the people. Thousands of people have died, monks and other people who protested some of the military actions. And so she, in 2015, they opened it up to elections. She actually was elected. Mm-hmm. And so they let her out of house arrest. She was able to run. She couldn't be president because the military also passed a law that no one who had children of foreign birth, foreign nationality, could be president, which is a rule they put up just so that she couldn't be president.
Right.
But anyway, she got around it by saying that the president has to answer to the prime minister, and so her party's in power right now, and so things have moved better. I mean, I think that's why Myanmar has opened up and why tourism is starting to go to Myanmar, why we were there, definitely. But, there's still some problems. There are particular problems with the Muslim population in the northwest of the country. And there's a lot of different kinds of reports out of there that are
but
not really.
It's a very strange situation, as I recall it. But I mean, there's some Buddhist leaders there that just hate the Muslims, and Buddhism usually doesn't hate anyone.
Yeah,
I mean, I have
a
Buddhist
really
background, and
it's
like, I mean, so some of these Buddhists really have been actually attacking, and there's been threats and a lot of hatred in the streets towards the Muslims, which is a very strange turnaround.
It is. That's indeed something that has been taking place, and she hasn't really come out in support of the Muslim population in Myanmar, and she's getting a little, she's getting some flack for that, and, you know, being the big freedom and liberty and democratic person that she was supposed to be, that it's all well and good until when it, until it comes to Muslims, and then their point of view, the government's point of view, is pretty much in line with the military's point of view.
Wow.
You know, it's, Myanmar is very strange. You know, they have all these standing armies. I mean, you know, the different minority groups have armies.
Yeah, and there's a lot of minority groups.
And there's a lot. There's like 135 minority groups. And some of them have huge armies. Some of the biggest, you know, some of them even to that equal the Myanmar's national army. So it's not an easy situation. And the fact that there's been any kind of cooperation and peace among these different warring parties is a miracle.
Yeah,
But yes, the Muslims have been left out of that those attempts to reconcile the different parties in Myanmar.
It's rather unique.
Country is wonderful anyway.
It is.
To travel
it is.
In, but you, know, you always have to pick what you want to support. So it's up to people's feelings about that.
Well, you know, and of course now as tourism and cruises and places start to go there more, there's a lot of vested interest in trying to keep anything from happening that is explosive, so you can maintain that those financial dollars that come with tourism. And of course your shows always help because people see places they've never seen before in your shows, and they go to festivals. You go to festivals that no one else ever shows, so it's always a very personable, unique approach that you take. Now, I have to ask you what you think of because Cambodia, Angkor Wat is becoming overcrowded, and now I hear they're limiting the amount of people that can actually get into Angkor Wat. Did you go up to Angkor Wat, or you skip it this time?
No, no. We our Cambodian trip started in Siem Reap and in Angkor, and certainly Angkor Wat, you know, the UNESCO World Heritage Site and one of the jewels in that whole complex, the archaeological park, Angkor Archaeological Park, which is, you know, hundreds of square miles. But that area around Siem Reap, which most people go to, is Angkor Wat and Prath Thom, the Tomb Raider temple, and Angkor Thom, the temple that people may know with, from all the faces on the towers, on the temple's towers. Those are extremely popular. Yes, it's overrun, but you can manage it. I mean, it's you have to pick the time of day when you're in certain places. You can expect if you're going to dawn at Angkor Wat, you will be there with hundreds and hundreds of other people, all in the same spot, trying to get the same picture. And you know, what's always interesting in those situations to me, and I did reference it in the show, is that people are so involved in taking the picture, and, you know, and obviously we're doing a television show, so we're involved in images as well. But you got to remember that you're there for the experience is not about taking a picture. The experience is about being there, sunrise in this historic site, and everything that represents, the cultural history of Cambodia that represents. And so it's good to kind of take a breath and realize that if you don't get the greatest picture in the world, it's not the end of the world. And what you need to do is to
be there
and be every day is a different moment.
Right.
Every day is a different sunrise. So everybody's going to get a different experience every day.
Yeah.
And so it's well worth it. It's you can get a 3-day pass, so it allows you to go in and out for 3 days to all through the Angkor area, and that some of those temples are an hour away.
I heard those are actually better to go to sometimes because they aren't overcrowded an hour away north of there, and I've heard there's some beautiful temples.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to go up to some of those?
I did when I was there, when Julie and I were there. For our show, since you imagine, we went to do a half-hour show that starts in Angkor and Siem Reap and Angkor at the archaeological park, and then ends up in Vietnam on the Mekong River, being on the Mekong River and emptying up, dumping out in the Mekong Delta, and out to and that's where we ended in the small river villages right in the Mekong Delta. Well, that's, you know, it's a lot to get in a half hour show, and
yes,
it turned
it is.
out we ended up creating two shows from it. There was just too much.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you can shortchange Angkor Archaeological Park and Angkor Wat and all those great, you know, beautiful temples. There's no way you can shortchange that and just do a cursory, this is what it is, now we're moving on to Phnom Penh. So that isn't what we did. We basically followed the river route, but we went as far as it would take us in one show, which was to the gates of Phnom Penh, and then from Phnom, then the next show picks up in Phnom Penh and takes us into the Delta and into Vietnam, and we end up in Vietnam, and as the crews did, and that's pretty much what we did.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't do exactly what the tour did, but we did basically follow the river down, which is what the story was about. And Cambodia's got, you know, a lot of other wonderful things and a lot of other stories to tell besides the one at Angkor, which is fantastic and certainly worth 2 or 3 days. But, you know, we went to silversmiths' villages, stonecutters' villages just off the side of the road, bridges that were built in the 10th century, you know, a lot of wonderful experiences with the people and in villages, along the river villages along the way. So, you know, a lot of interesting things going on. And of course, then there's the whole horrific history of Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge, which in the United States and the bombing of Cambodia and all that history that is also evident there and becomes an attraction. It's something that you need to see. I mean,
absolutely, you know, have to. Yeah. Well, you can't avoid it. It wiped out a generation of people there. It wiped out a generation.
Yeah, over 2 million people were, you know, murdered in 4 years.
Yeah.
And so it's,
and people still have to worry about the mines, and the kids still are getting.
Right. People are still being injured from the mines, and a lot of people, and the country's still struggling to recover from that. It's not something you recover from in couple of generations, and they're still in the cover. There's a lot of help. We also highlighted the work that the non-government organizations doing, the NGOs, in working in training marginalized kids, people with disadvantaged children from the countryside, you know, educating them and training them, and revitalizing and bringing back the arts and crafts.
Yes, I have to tell you a little story about that, because we have a friend here that lives on Maui, Tom Vendetti, does the Angkor Wat Film Festival, and there's some wonderful Hawaiian, a wonderful Hawaiian man, Kaola Beamer, and him and another wonderful musician, Jeff Peterson, went down, and they brought 40 wonderful $180 piece ukuleles, and they taught the children in a workshop down there how to play ukuleles.
Wow.
And now these kids, and unfortunately they wouldn't allow them to give the ukuleles to the kids. They said these kids' parents only make that much in a year, and they would take the ukuleles and sell them, so you got to keep them in the schools. But there's now they're doing hula, because they taught them hula also and ukulele, and they're singing in competitions, and it means the world to them, you know, because they're getting these opportunities, and they're so precious, those children, and it means so much to them. We can't even imagine that they make so little money, you know, and they're trying to survive on nothing down there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite extraordinary. You know, the things are, for instance, in Vietnam, things are still, I've gotten better, of course, since the war years, and not just the war with the United States, the war with France, the war with the Cambodians, the war with China. I mean, it's one war after another these people have gone through, and things have gotten better, definitely. But there's still the a large percentage of the people, close to 60%, still live at below the poverty line, which is, by the way, the poverty line is $2.25 a day per person.
Oh,
so that's the poverty line.
Oh, my.
So there's about 60% of the population that lives below that. And the rest, I mean, so if you
live
at it, I guess if you have $2.26, you're no longer below the poverty line.
Wow.
But you still are living a subsistence life. So, you know, of course, the things you're always faced with when you travel is the juxtaposition of what your life is like and the life that you're witnessing when you visit people and you're with people.
Yeah, but tourism really helps. It brings in a lot of money, and it definitely helps the economy.
No, definitely. It definitely is one of the And that's why most of those governments work very hard to promote it. You know, hopefully the people actually do benefit, and mm-hmm. they do benefit directly. And we bring that up in the show, too, by tourists going to restaurants and shops and, mm-hmm. and helping support the artisans and the local people and purchasing their goods and
absolutely
and dining at their restaurants and, you know, doing that kind of thing. It's very
and we learn so much from things. And I can't wait. When does your next season come out, Joseph?
This season is going to be, it's going to start airing in January of 2018.
Okay, I can't wait to see it. I really enjoy watching your shows. I've been watching them and just love. You did one on Portugal. Did one
that's
on Lisbon.
Part of season nine, the Emmy-winning season.
I told my co-host here, Kathy Takushi, is going to Portugal in October, and I told her she had to see that because that's a lovely show you did.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's part of our ninth season, the Emmy-winning season. And people can get information on all the shows at travelscope.net. If they go there, they can see promos to all of our shows. We also stream on Amazon. So, and you certainly can purchase DVDs on our website, but you can stream us on Amazon. And we're now streaming, this year, starting to stream internationally on Amazon.
Really?
So we hope to be reaching people all around the world.
Wow, that's great news.
The reason we do what we do is to spread the word, to spread a positive message and to be a positive force in the world. And, you know, trying
and
to,
you are. You absolutely are with what you do.
While we're living the life, living the dream, we're also trying to do some good.
Well, congratulations on your Emmys and your wonderful shows. Always love talking to you, Joseph.
Yes.
Thank you so much for calling in from Topanga. Sure. A big aloha to you and Julie.
All right. Aloha to you, too.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.